I wonder if Samson's best man and Samson's ex-wife had a really great marriage.
You just wake up wondering that?
I did, actually. I woke up 5 minutes ago from my mid-afternoon nap, and I thought that.
You just start wondering those things.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I crashed pretty hard yesterday after eating too much decadence.
Yeah.
And now, yeah.
I wonder things like, who's going to give us more figs and dates? We haven't had those in a while.
I mean, I'm just...
That's what I wonder.
I know what I know is that this ox is feeling muzzled. Mm. You know what I mean?
I'm not sure I know what you mean, but like, I'll trust you on that one.
Like, I don't know. I'm just out here treading out the grain. Ox, you know, muzzled. And this, you know,
yeah,
I'm muzzled as an ox. So.
You get called an ox. I get called Mr. Clean.
That's fair. Don't muzzle the ox as it treads out the grain. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
No.
Speaking of muzzling the ox, Eric, it is day 95 today.
How dare you?
And we are going to read Judges 15, 16, 17.
That's what we're going to do.
Jump ahead to Mark chapter 2.
That's what we're going to do. We're very well fed. That's all I was going to say.
Thank you.
Samson's vengeance on the Philistines. Later on, during the wheat harvest, Samson took a young goat as a present to his wife. He said, "I'm going into my wife's room to sleep with her," but her father wouldn't let him in. "I truly thought you must hate her," her father explained, "so I gave her in marriage to your best man. But look, her younger sister is even more beautiful than she is. Marry her instead." Samson said, "This time I cannot be blamed for everything I'm going to do to you Philistines." Then he went out and caught 300 foxes. He tied their tails together in pairs, and he fastened a torch to each pair of tails. Then he lit the torches and let the foxes run through the grain fields of the Philistines. He burned all their grain to the ground, including the sheaves and the uncut grain. He also destroyed their vineyards and olive groves. "Who did this?" the Philistines demanded. "Samson," was the reply, "because his father-in-law from Timnah gave Samson's wife to be married to his best man." So the Philistines went and got the woman and her father and burned them to death. "Because you did this," Samson vowed, "I won't rest until I take my revenge on you." So he attacked the Philistines with great fury and killed many of them. Then he went to live in a cave in the rock of Edom. The Philistines retaliated by setting up camp in Judah and spreading out near the town of Lehi. The men of Judah asked the Philistines, "Why are you attacking us?" The Philistines replied, "We've come to capture Samson. We've come to pay him back for what he did to us." So 3,000 men of Judah went down to get Samson at the cave at the rock of Edom. And they said to Samson, "Don't you realize the Philistines rule over us? What are you doing to us?" But Samson replied, "I only did to them what they did to me." But the men of Judah told him, "We have come to tie you up and hand you over to the Philistines." "All right," Samson said, "but promise that you won't kill me yourselves." "We will only tie you up and hand you over to the Philistines," they replied. "We won't kill you." So they tied him up with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. As Samson arrived at Lehi, the Philistines came shouting in triumph. But the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon Samson, and he snapped the ropes on his arms as if they were burnt strands of flax, and they fell from his wrists. Then he found the jawbone of a recently killed donkey. He picked it up and killed 1,000 Philistines with it. Then Samson said, "With the jawbone of a donkey, I've piled them in heaps. With the jawbone of a donkey, I've killed 1,000 men." When he finished his boasting, he threw away the jawbone, and the place was named Jawbone Hill. Samson was now very thirsty, and he cried out to the Lord, "You have accomplished this great victory by the strength of your servant. Must I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of these pagans?" So God caused water to gush out of a hollow in the ground at Lehi, and Samson was revived as he drank. Then he named the place the Spring of the One Who Cried Out, and it's still in Lehi to this day. Samson judged Israel for 20 years during the period when the Philistines dominated the land.
Judges chapter 16, Samson carries away Gaza's gates. One day Samson went to the Philistine town of Gaza and spent the night there with a prostitute. Word soon spread that Samson was there, so the men of Gaza gathered together and waited all night at the town gates. They kept quiet during the night, saying to themselves, "When the light of the morning comes, we will kill him." But Samson stayed in bed only until midnight. Then he got up, took hold of the doors of the town gate, including the two posts, and lifted them up, bar and all. He put them on his shoulders and carried them all the way to the top of the hill across from Hebron. Samson and Delilah. Sometime later, Samson fell in love with a woman named Delilah, who lived in the valley of Sorek. The rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, "Entice Samson to tell you what makes him so strong and how he can be overpowered and tied up securely. Then each of us will give you 1,100 pieces of silver." So Delilah said to Samson, "Please tell me what makes you so strong and what it would take to tie you up securely." Samson replied, "Well, if I were tied up with 7 new bowstrings that have not yet been dried, I would become as weak as anyone else." So the Philistine rulers brought Delilah 7 new bowstrings, and she tied Samson up with them. She had hidden some men in the inner rooms of her house, and she cried out, "Samson, the Philistines have come to capture you." Samson snapped the bowstrings as a piece of string snaps when it is burned by fire. So the secret of his strength was not discovered. Afterward, Delilah said to him, "You've been making fun of me and telling me lies. Now please tell me how you can be tied up securely." Samson replied, "If I were tied up with brand new ropes that had never been used, I would become as weak as anyone else." So Delilah took new ropes and tied them up with them, and the men were hiding in the inner room as before. And again, Delilah cried out, "Samson, the Philistines have come to capture you." But again, Samson snapped the ropes from his arms as if they were thread. Then Delilah said, "You've been making fun of me and telling me lies. Now tell me, how can you be tied up securely?" Samson replied, "If you were to weave 7 braids of my hair into the fabric of your loom and tighten it with the loom shuttle, I would become as weak as anyone else." So while he slept, Delilah wove the 7 braids of his hair into fabric. Then she tightened it with the loom shuttle. Again, she cried out, "Samson, the Philistines have come to capture you." But Samson woke up, pulled back the loom shuttle, and yanked his hair away from the loom and the fabric. Then Delilah pouted. "Boo hoo hoo. How can you tell me I love you when you don't share your secrets with me? You've made fun of me 3 times now, and you still haven't told me what makes you so strong." She tormented him with her nagging day after day until he was sick to death of it. Finally, Samson shared his secret with her. "My hair has never been cut," he confessed, "for I was dedicated to God as a Nazarite from birth. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me and it would become as weak as anyone else." Delilah realized that he had finally told her the truth. So she sent for the Philistine rulers. "Come back one more time," she said, "for he has finally told me his secret." So the Philistine rulers returned with the money in their hands. Delilah lulled Samson to sleep with his head in her lap, and then she called in a man to shave off the 7 locks of his hair. In this way, she began to bring him down, and his strength left him. Then she cried out, "Samson, the Philistines have come to capture you." When he woke up, he thought, "I'll do as before and shake myself free." But he didn't realize the Lord had left him. So Philistines captured him and gouged out his eyes. They took him to Gaza, where he was bound with bronze chains and forced to grind grain in prison. But before long, his hair began to grow back.
Samson's final victory. The Philistine rulers had a great festival, offering sacrifices and praising their god Dagon. They said, "Our God has given us victory over our enemy Samson." When the people saw him, they praised their god, saying, "Our God has delivered our enemy to us. The one who killed so many of us is now in our power." Half drunk by now, the people demanded, "Bring out Samson so he can amuse us." So he was brought from the prison to amuse them, and they had him stand between the pillars supporting the roof. Samson said to the young servant who was leading him by the hand, "Place my hand against the pillars that hold up the temple. I want to rest against them." Now the temple was completely filled with people. All the Philistine rulers were there, and there were about 3,000 men and women on the roof who were watching as Samson amused them. Then Samson prayed to the Lord, "Sovereign Lord, remember me again. O God, please strengthen me just one more time. With one blow, let me pay back the Philistines for the loss of my 2 eyes." Then Samson put his hands against the 2 center pillars that held up the temple. Pushing against them with both hands, he prayed, "Let me die with the Philistines." And then the temple crashed down on the Philistine rulers and all the people. So he killed more people when he died than he had during his entire lifetime. Later, his brothers and others went down to get the body. They took him back home and buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol, where his father, Manoah, was buried. Samson had judged Israel for 20 years.
Judges chapter 17, Micah's idols. There was a man named Micah who lived in the hill country of Ephraim. One day he said to his mother, "I heard you place a curse on the person who stole 1,100 pieces of silver from you. Well, I have the money. I was the one who took it." "The Lord bless you for admitting it," his mother replied. He returned the money to her, and she said, "I now dedicate these silver coins to the Lord in honor of my son. I will have an image carved and an idol cast." So when he returned the money to his mother, she took 200 silver coins and gave them to a silversmith, who made them into an image and an idol. And these were placed in Micah's house. Micah set up a shrine for the idol, and he made a sacred ephod and some household idols. Then he installed one of his sons as his personal priest. In those days, Israel had no king. All the people did whatever seemed right in their own eyes. One day, a young Levite who had been living in Bethlehem in Judah arrived in that area. He left Bethlehem in search of another place to live. As he traveled, he came to the hill country of Ephraim. He happened to stop at Micah's house as he was traveling through. "Where are you from?" Micah asked him. He replied, "I'm a Levite from Bethlehem in Judah, and I am looking for a place to live." "Stay here with me," Micah said, "and you can be a father and a priest to me. I'll give you 10 pieces of silver a year, plus a change of clothes and your food." The Levite agreed to this, and the young man became like one of Micah's sons. So Micah installed the Levite as his personal priest, and he lived in Micah's house. "I know the Lord will bless me now," Micah said, "because I have a Levite serving as my priest."
Okay, now we jump forward here to Mark chapter 2. Jesus heals a paralyzed man. When Jesus returned to Capernaum several days later, the news spread quickly that he was back home. Soon the house where he was staying was so packed with visitors that there was no more room, even outside the door. While he was preaching God's word to them, four men arrived carrying a paralyzed man on a mat. They couldn't bring him to Jesus because of the crowd, so they dug a hole through the roof above his head. Then they lowered the man on his mat right down in front of Jesus. Seeing their faith, Jesus said to the paralyzed man, "My child, your sins are forgiven." But some of the teachers of religious law were sitting there and thought to themselves, "What is he saying? This is blasphemy. Only God can forgive sins." Jesus knew immediately what they were thinking, so he asked them, "Why do you question this in your hearts? Is it easier to say to a paralyzed man, 'Your sins are forgiven,' or 'Stand up, pick up your mat, and walk'? So I will prove to you that the Son of Man has the authority on earth to forgive sins." Then Jesus turned to the paralyzed man and said, "Stand up, pick up your mat, and go home." And the man jumped up, grabbed his mat, and walked out through the stunned onlookers. They were all amazed and praised God, exclaiming, "We've never seen anything like this before."
Jesus calls Levi, Matthew. Then Jesus went out to the lake shore again and taught the crowds that were coming to him. As he walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting in his tax collector's booth. "Follow me and be my disciple," Jesus said to him. So Levi got up and he followed him. Later, Levi invited Jesus and his disciples to his home as dinner guests, along with many tax collectors and other disreputable sinners. There were many people of this kind among Jesus' followers. But when the teachers of religious law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with tax collectors and other sinners, they asked his disciples, "Why does he eat with such scum?" When Jesus heard this, he told them, "Healthy people don't need a doctor. Sick people do. I've come to call not those who think they are righteous, but those who know they are sinners."
A discussion about fasting. Once, when John's disciples and the Pharisees were fasting, some people came to Jesus and asked, "Why don't your disciples fast like John's disciples and the Pharisees do?" Jesus replied, "Do wedding guests fast while celebrating with the groom? Of course not. They can't fast while the groom is with them. But if someday the groom will be taken away from them, and then they will fast. Besides, who would patch old clothing with new winecloth? For the patch would shrink and rip away from the old winecloth, leaving an even bigger tear than before. And no one puts new wine into old wineskins, for the wine would burst the wineskins, and the wine and the skins would both be lost. New wine calls for new wineskins."
A discussion about the Sabbath. One Sabbath day, as Jesus was walking through some grain fields, his disciples began breaking off heads of grain to eat. But the Pharisees said to Jesus, "Look, why are you breaking the law by harvesting grain on the Sabbath?" Jesus said to them, "Haven't you read in the scriptures what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He went into the house of God during the days when Abiathar was high priest and broke the law by eating the sacred loaves of bread that only the priests are allowed to eat. He also gave some to his companions." Then Jesus said to them, "The Sabbath was made to meet the needs of the people, and not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even over the Sabbath."
And that is our reading today. Okay. And we read it with two questions in mind. How does this help us love God more? How does this help us love others more? Mm-hmm. So Chip, mm-hmm. How does this help you love God more?
Yeah. I love God because of forgiveness. You know, one of the reasons I love him is because I'm forgiven of my sins. And we're reminded here that only God can forgive sins, and Jesus is God and forgives sins. And he showed by healing the paralyzed man, which seems like it was easier to say, mm-hmm. You know, your sins are forgiven. But he's like, "Okay, let me prove it." And boom, you know, healed him. So that's awesome. And so I'm grateful that my sins are forgiven. He's canceled the debt of my sins so that I, you know, can be saved. You know, we've talked about this, you know, maybe before here, from the penalty of sin, mm-hmm. which is separation from him of all eternity, the power of sin, which is sin's impact on my life today, even as a believer, I'm saved from that. And I'm saved ultimately from the presence of sin mm-hmm. with him for all of eternity. And it's all because of forgiveness. And I'm very grateful and very thankful. I don't deserve it. I'm thankful for it. I need it. We all need it.
Yep.
And God provides it in through Jesus. And we see that demonstrated here. So very thankful. And so just to jump on top of that a little bit more real quick. Mm-hmm. Because of that, I think it changes how we live, what we do, what we say, how we say it, our motives, everything. The heart of the matter, the heart is who we are, and it's where God turns. It's the real us. Mm-hmm. Should be different because of that. Like when you realized that you're not righteous, you know, he says that even later, you know that I'm messed up, I'm broken, and that God did what he did because he wanted to, and we needed it, and he provided it. It really should change the yeah. way you look at life, the way you live. And it's really, you know, you live based on what he did, and it just free, you know, flows freely
yep.
in your life, and not guilt, but gratitude.
Right. Yeah. So, I love that.
There you go.
Good job. I like that one a lot. Okay. How does this help me love others more?
Yeah.
I want to be the kind of guy okay. that is so obsessed mm. with getting my friends and my loved ones to Jesus
okay.
that I'll straight up cut open a stranger's roof.
You would.
You know, like I want to be that kind of guy.
Yeah.
I want everyone listening to this podcast to be that kind of guy or that kind of woman. And just like, that's who we're called to be. We're supposed to be a little bit crazy about how far the lengths we'll go to reach the people that we love, the people that we can influence, the people that we can reach. Like we need to be a little bit crazy about it.
I like that.
I think that's real love.
Yeah.
You know, and they tore apart that dude's roof.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I'm sure the guy didn't.
No. No.
But
no, he's, you know, hoping his insurance will cover it.
So maybe also, Chip.
Okay.
And I don't know what this would look like. Maybe also I want to be a guy who's okay with people tearing open my roof if that's what it takes to get their loved ones to Jesus. And I'm not stopping anyone from getting to Jesus.
Yeah. Right?
Like that's not my MO at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if maybe sometimes I need to be a little uncomfortable with how far people are willing to go to get their people to Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, and then just be okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the owner of that house wasn't stopping people from getting to Jesus. There was just a crowd there.
Yeah.
You know, and then they ripped apart his roof. And I wonder, man, maybe there's something in my life. And I don't know for sure. I've got nothing on the top of my mind here. Mm-hmm. But like maybe there's something in my life that needs to kind of get flipped around a little bit so more people yeah. can bring their people to Jesus, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes that's in your own personal life where you are willing to allow things to be mixed up a little bit
yeah.
or even at church. We get so used to how we do church.
Sure.
You know, sometimes it's good to mix things up there too. Being willing to sacrifice some things that, you know, you might not want to
yeah.
for the sake of reaching others. So.
Yeah. I'm thinking of like, you know, I totally agree with that. And just like building off of each other here. I think that maybe one of the things that, I don't know, it's a call that I've put out before, you know, like I think Christians get really freaked out about, the whole LGBT, the whole acronym, right? And like the, like homosexuality and like all that stuff. And I just wonder if maybe some churches need their roof tore open to get to, so that friends of homosexual people or gender dysphoric people can bring their friends into the church building and it'll be okay,
yep.
right? Like that's where they need to be. Like, even if it means that they have to tear open our roof a little bit, you know, make us a little uncomfortable, a little unhappy for a second, you know?
Yeah.
Just thinking about those kinds of things. And like, I think there's something cool there. I think there's something to that. So, because God forgives, right?
Yeah.
Like that's, there's
sure.
forgiveness there
Absolutely.
Available to them. So, yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Good episode.
Yeah. There, and we could talk a lot about that.
Yeah,
there's
sure.
a difference between that and allow a false teacher to come in
right.
to purposely
totally
say
true.
That that's affirming.
Because they're going to try to tear your roof down.
Sure. They're going to tear the whole building down.
Yeah, they're going to tear the whole thing down. Yeah. Absolutely, so, yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying.
Yep.
Home run. All right.
Cool.
Thanks for joining us, guys. Pretty cool. Pretty exciting.
We'll be back again one more day tomorrow to let Allison recover.
Okay. And then, so I'm back again tomorrow.
You're back again tomorrow.
Wow.
Three chips in a row.
3 days in a row.
Three chips in a row,
chip,
bro.
Chip, hooray.
Chip, chip, chip. Hooray.
That was awesome.
That was good. Have you ever said chip, chip, hooray in your life?
Never.
Well, I need you to know it's probably going to catch on, man. You're probably going to regret
chip,
that.
Chip, chip, hooray.
Chip, chip, hooray.